I'm holding on Zion Amud Beis, about two-thirds of the way down the Amud, the line begins L'mizracha. Okay. Since now we've discussed all the details about the land borders of Eretz Yisrael, now we've got to start talking about the water. Tanachada, so we learn one Braisa says, how maybe get this sphina, if somebody brings a get on board a ship, meaning that it was written on board the ship, can maybe be Eretz Yisrael, and it's the equivalent, and we're talking about, at this point the Gemara assumes we're talking about that the ship is traveling, the boat is traveling on one of the rivers in Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
Well, you only have one full-time river over there, the Yarden, but you have the wadis that we talked about at the end of Sota, the ones that during wintertime are full of water. There's waterways there that happen. What?
The Arkon, yes.
The Arkon, I don't know, is it deep enough for water? Could be, I don't know. Whatever you have. So at this point, well, that's what we're going to get to that soon, but yeah, okay. So one Braisa says that if you have a get that was written on board a ship to maybe be Eretz Yisrael, then it's the equivalent of the rest of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you don't have to say Rufana Nechta, Rufana Nechta. But Tani Yidach, so maybe Chutz La'aretz. And you have another Braisa that says that it's the equivalent of bringing it from Chutz La'aretz, because yes, it's within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, but it's not considered the equivalent. It's not considered the equivalent of the land. Chayes just talks about that even if you were to say, as we learned earlier, as we learned a couple of dasim ago, the idea that the cities that are samuch or muvla to Eretz Yisrael maybe are considered a part of Eretz Yisrael for this purpose, but rivers are even less than that, because at least cities are places where people live and they travel from one place to another. Rivers are not. But come on, you have the question, Mepharshim talk about, where are these people on board the ship from? On the face of it, if they're people from Eretz Yisrael, then what's the problem? Just because they're on board a ship, would the second Braisa say that they lose their name on us? They still know the dinim of Lishma. And if you're talking B'nai Chutz La'aretz, then why would we say, what would be the difference, in other words? So one way of looking at it, indeed, one of the Mepharshim, in fact, wants to say that we're talking about people who spend pretty much all their time on the ship. So therefore, yeah, they might have a status unto themselves. So, Amar Rav Yehuda, like Kasha, Har Rav Yehuda, Har Rabbanan. So Rav Yehuda says, it's not a contradiction. The two braises go respectively according to Rav Yehuda and the Rabbanan. Tanan, we learn in the Mishnah, in Chala. Offer Chutz La'aretz Habab is Sfina La'aretz. Dirt from Chutz La'aretz that is brought on board a ship to Eretz Yisrael, and while it's on board the ship, you planted something in that dirt and it started growing. So Chayiv Maisu Veshvis. Omer Rav Yehuda, the aim of Saiv is Manshas Tvinah Gesheshe. So Rav Yehuda says, when does that apply? Only if the ship is touching the bottom. Like you were just saying, there are shallow rivers, we're talking shallow rivers, where the boat, as it's going along, is constantly scraping along the bottom over there. So therefore, it's like the dirt on board the ship is basically connected with the riverbed.
The boat is connected to the earth by the water.
And we'll talk about that possibility soon. Wait. For right now, if the boat is not touching the riverbed, then no. Then the dirt will be potter. So far what we have, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda would say that if the ship is not touching bottom, then it's considered the equivalent of Chutz La'aretz. And the Tanakhama doesn't seem to make that distinction. He says, regardless, it's considered like Eretz Yisrael. So the first Braisa that says that a get written on shipboard would be considered like Eretz Yisrael, that would be like the Chachamim. The second Braisa would be according to Rabbi Yehuda.
Not to do with
Tosfos asked the question, what's the logic to think that the dinim of Meiser have anything to do with the dinim of Gittin? Tosfos says, for example, let's say you plant something on a second floor of a house in Eretz Yisrael, it may well be potter from Maaser, because it's not directly on the ground. Nevertheless, you're not going to say if somebody writes a get on the second floor of a house in Eretz Yisrael, they're going to have to get the fun of next. So obviously there's not such a comparison. Okay, Tosfos answers that in principle, the difference is, though, that over there you have the attic is on top of, is above land, which would be chayev and meiser. So if you planted on the ground floor, yes, you'd be chayev and meiser. Therefore, we have no reason to, in other words, not that the attic per se is a place that's butter from meiser, it just so happens it's not in direct contact with the ground, but it is above ground, which is chayev and meiser. Whereas over here, we're talking about a riverbed which where the riverbed there's no it'll never be chayv in Meiser or in Shvius because it's not a plantable place. So therefore, therefore the Gemara can be making that comparison. That's the connection, basically, is once we're saying that the dinim of Gittin applies, that the dinim of the Fun and Nefta, the Fun and Nefta, don't... So that's what I'm saying. You have two different ways of looking at it. Are we talking about these people came from Eretz Yisrael, but nevertheless, though, we would say the fact that they're on board ship, and if we argue that a ship is not considered Eretz Yisrael, that the river is not considered part of Eretz Yisrael for that purpose, then we would say, like we said before, Shalei Tachlos with Medina Siyam. We don't want to start making distinctions where in Medina Siyam we're going to say yes, where we're going to say not. If a river, for this purpose, is considered outside Eretz Yisrael, which it is for purposes of Meiser, then maybe we might say that you still have to say Bafana Nechtev even if the people on board ship are from Eretz Yisrael and know the dinim of Lishma. Again, the other way of looking at it is maybe we're talking about people who are constantly on board ship. They hardly ever go on the dry land.
So it goes by the people or by the ship? I mean, you think...
That's what I'm saying. There's two possible ways to look at it. We could say that we go according to the ship. The same way as, for example, I mean, so what if, till now we've been talking about Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz La'aretz. If a Ben Eretz Yisrael travels to Chutz La'aretz and writes a get there, does the Shliach who brings that get have to say B'fana Nechtem, B'fana Nechtem? We might say yes. Again, Shalei Tachlos B'Medina Siyam. We don't want to start making distinctions. Well, where did this person in Medina Siyam who wrote the get originally come from? So by the same token, then, if we say that the river is not considered for this purpose part of Eretz Yisrael, which is what Rabbi Yehuda seems to be saying, that if the ship is not gesheshes, if it's not touching bottom, then it's not. Then by that token, you might say then that if you write a get on board ship, then you do have to say b'fanan nechtem, because we don't want to start making such distinctions. They'll be too hard to keep track of.
It would be confusing for the people around in Eretz Yisrael to wonder why you have to say something.
Okay, so they'll know that they'll understand the same way as we're saying in the mission over here that if you have plants that grow on board ship and according to the Rebbe, the ship was not gesheshes, then they're going to be potter from Meiser. The same way they'll realize that distinction. Now, what kind of ship? First of all, what kind of ship are we talking about, and what kind of dirt are we talking about? So the ship, Rashi says, we have to be talking about over here that the ship is made out of earthenware, out of clay, which is an unusual kind of material to make boats out of. Rashi brings up, based on a Gemara in Menachos that mentions such a thing. The point of it is that Rashi holds, and we'll see from the next piece of Gemara, if the ship was made out of wood, which is the normal material for making ships, then in order for the dirt on board to be considered attached to the dirt on bottom, even if the ship itself is actually touching bottom, the ship would have to have a hole in it. And obviously a ship is not going to have a hole in it. So therefore, necessarily, Rashi says it has to be made out of clay, and in the case of a clay ship, whatever, it would have to be, someplace where it would be able to connect with the ground underneath, and obviously you're not going to have that. So therefore, Rashi is forced to say that the ship is made out of earthenware, which in that case, cheres, which in that case, Rashi says, it doesn't need to have a hole in order for the plants on board to be considered that they have a connection, that they derive nourishment from the ground underneath. If the ship is cheres, even though it doesn't have a hole, then the roots of the plants that are on board the ship are able to get nourishment from the ground underneath, from the riverbed, through the cheres, even without it having a hole. Okay, so it's an unusual thing. We do find a Gemara in Menachos that mentions such a thing. Tosfos has a long discussion about it and says actually the other way around. Tosfos says that if a ship or a flower pot, as we'll talk about next in the Gemara or whatever, is made out of cheres, it does have to have a hole in order for the plant in that flower pot or ship or whatever to be considered connected to the ground underneath. When do you say that not? On the contrary, if it's made out of wood. Because if the ship is made out of wood, then it absorbs moisture much more readily.
Usually an otzit is cheres, right?
An otzit is cheres,
yeah,
and a ship is wood. Right, an otzit is flower pot, which is the next thing the Gemara is going to talk about. So that's the point. In other words, Rashi is saying... So that's the thing. Rashi is saying that... Wait. So Rashi is saying that the ship we're talking about over here is made out of clay, therefore it doesn't need a hole. On the other hand, the flower pot, which is the next thing the Gemara is going to talk about, would need to have a hole in it if it's not directly on the ground. If it's, well, you know what, let's go to the next piece of Gemara, and then we'll see. Abaya, Mahava Rabbi Yehuda. Abaya says no, both brises could be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Velekasha, kan bizman she'en asfina gesheshes, kan bizman she'asfina gesheshes. No, very simple. The two brises themselves can be the two distinctions that Rabbi Yehuda is making, whether the ship is touching bottom or not.
Abaya, you always comes with reconciling every
life. The Omer of Zera. Otzit naku hamunach gabi yisedis. What if you have a flower pot with a hole and there's plants growing in it, there's grain or what have you growing, vegetables or whatever growing in it, hamunach gabi yisedis, and this flower pot that has a hole is sitting on top of pegs. So if it was sitting directly on the ground, there'd be no question that the stuff in it is chayav and ma'aser, because then it derives nourishment directly from the ground. But if it's on pegs, so it's a few inches or feet or whatever off the ground, then we have the same machloikas. According to the Rabbanan, we would consider as if it's placed on the ground, the same way as the Rabbanan are saying that it doesn't matter with the ship whether it's touching bottom or not. And Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's the same way as the ship has to be touching bottom for the dirt on the ship to be considered connected to the ground beneath, the same way he'd say that the flower pot with the hole. Okay, so here's the point. Before we get to the next piece of Gemara, so here's the point we can talk about. So Rashi is saying, again, Rashi is saying the ship is made out of clay. Therefore, it doesn't need a hole. Regardless whether it has a hole or not, and obviously a ship is not going to have a hole, if it's touching bottom, then according to Yehuda, it's considered connected, the dirt on it is considered connected to the ground. If not, then not. It's through the clay, in other words, because the plants are able to get their nourishment from the underlying ground, from the riverbed, through the clay. Clay is for it. Yeah, because if clay is baked, then you're not going to make a ship out of unbaked clay, it'll fall apart.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Nevertheless, I mean, this, I guess the same way as, for example, we find in Hilchos Kashrus that clay is porous and therefore it absorbs and you can never kasher it. I guess by the same token, Rashi would hold that clay is porous enough that the plants are able to get some nourishment from the ground underneath. Whereas the flower pot, Rashi says, is made out of wood, and therefore, when do we say that it's considered connected to the ground? Only either if it's placed on the ground, or, according to the Chachamim, even if it's not, but it has to have a hole. If it doesn't have a hole, then there's nothing to talk about.
Okay,
so Tosfos says the other way around. Tosfos says that ships are usually made out of wood, flower pots are usually made out of clay, and therefore it's the other way around. A wooden ship does not need to have a hole because it's able to absorb, it absorbs moisture from the water, and therefore the plants get nourishment from the ground underneath that way. Whereas the flower pot is made out of clay, and therefore it needs to have a hole in order for plants inside to get their nourishment. Okay, two different svaras. No. The other question, anyway, is as far as the case with the ship, and maybe also with the case with the flower pot, where did the dirt come from? The Mishnah started by saying, "Alfa chutzlaretz habav esfina la'aretz," that dirt from chutzlaretz. Would the same thing apply if it was dirt from Eretz Yisrael? So the Mishnah Lamelech says yes. He has a long discussion. He says that, yes, there's no difference in this regard whether the dirt is from Chutz-Lahoretz or from Eretz Yisrael. Either way, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the ship is not touching bottom, that dirt is not chayev, and is not chayev, at least not midaraisa, in Truma and Meiser and the other mitzvahs of Chutz-Lahoretz for us. Maybe in Rabbanon it is, but not midaraisa. The reason why we're saying offer chutzlaretz is because the chiddush is, according to the Chachamim always, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, if it's touching bottom, then nevertheless it's considered connected to Eretz Yisrael, and that dirt from chutzlaretz now became dirt of Eretz Yisrael, which is chayav and ma'aser. Many other, based on what various Rishonim say, based on Tosfos' discussion over here, the Ritzvah talks about it, seems that not. They distinguish between if the dirt is from Eretz Yisrael, then there's no question, it's always chayav in ma'aser and shvi'as and so forth. Only if it comes from chutzlaretz, offer chutzlaretz above a spina, then you have the difference according to the Chachamim always, and of course, as long as it's within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and according to the Behuda, only if the ship is touching bottom will it be chayev. Okay. So Amar Rava, Dilma Loif. So Rava says, maybe not. Rav Zera, you're saying that the machloikas, you're saying that the situation with the flower pot, whether it's touching the ground or whether it's on pegs, whether it's on stilts, is going to depend on the machloikas or Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim about the boat. Maybe not. Ad kan lakom Rabbi Yehuda ha. So maybe Rabbi Yehuda only says he's din in the case of the ship, distinguishing between whether it's touching bottom or not. Ela b'sfina ha'suri l'vroyach, only because a ship is made to move. So you have, in other words, it's constantly moving from place to place. So therefore, he'll say, if it's not, okay, when it's moving, if it's touching bottom, fine. But if it's moving and it's not touching bottom, that's reason enough to consider the dirt on it not connected to the dirt of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore for it not to be chayev. Aval otzit sheina otzit livroyach, but a flower pot is not normally something that moves around. Maybe he would say that a flower pot, regardless whether it's actually sitting on the ground or whether it's on stilts, is still gonna be chayiv as long as it has a hole. As long as it has a hole. Again, according to Rashi, it's wooden and it needs a hole. According to Tosafot, it's earthenware and it needs a hole. Inami, or you could say the other way around. Ad kan lekamer rabbanon hasan el besfina. Maybe the rabbanon only say their din when it comes to a ship, that they would say that regardless the dirt is anything that grows in that dirt is going to be chayiv in ma'aser and in shviyit, regardless whether the ship is touching bottom or not. But only with a ship, the lemaksik avira, because there's no air separating. Then this is what you said before. There's no air separating the plant, the dirt, from the riverbed. There's water separating. The water for this purpose can be considered like a thick layer of dirt. We had this svara way back in Shabbos and in Erevin that the water inside a pit or something can be considered like an extension of the land. But in the case of a flower pot, if you're putting it on top of pegs, on top of stilts, maybe not. There's air in the middle, and not necessarily is the plant going to be able to get nourishment from the ground underneath through that empty space. So therefore, so you can't say necessarily, Rava is saying that the machloikus and that Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon would have the same machloikus with the otzit knockover as they would with the shit. Maybe each of them might agree with the other one, or
because there's different
circumstances. Yeah. Okay. Thus far, we were saying that the original two brises that we said, where we said started out by saying that if somebody brings a get that was written on board ship, we had one brise saying that it's considered the equivalent of Eretz Yisrael, and another one saying it's the equivalent of Chutzlar. We were assuming in this discussion so far that we're talking about a ship that's traveling on a river in Eretz Yisrael, and that led us into this whole discussion. Now the Gemara takes another tack. Rav Nachman made Sukhama, but Nahardis there in Tisrael Kulam Lechligi. No, when it comes to the rivers in Eretz Yisrael, everybody would agree, for sure those are considered like Eretz Yisrael. We're not going to start distinguishing between the rivers and the land. Elekitzligi biyamagodol. Rather, so even if the ship is not Gesheshes, because after all, I mean, the logic is, the reason behind why you need b'fananechtem or don't need it has to do with what the B'nai Eretz Yisrael know or not. It doesn't have to do with whether dirt on board is able to know, whether planted in dirt on board, it's not relevant. So therefore, there's no question, whether it's river or land, you don't say b'fananechtem, that was the first svara. Now Rav Nachman is doing a different svara. Keep plig b'yam ha'gadol. No, rather these two brises are arguing about what about a ship in the Mediterranean? What parts of the Mediterranean are considered part of Eretz Yisrael? Titania, so we learn a brise as follows. Ezer Eretz Vezel Chutz La'aretz. What is considered Eretz Yisrael? What is considered on the Mediterranean? So let me draw schematic map over here of Eretz Yisrael and of the Mediterranean. That's good enough for our purposes. So there's Eretz Yisrael. The pasuk, when it lists the borders of Eretz Yisrael, this is Italy, whatever. Okay. Actually, that'll become important as we'll see later. And then there's islands all over the place here and there. Anyway, so the pasuk lists in Parshas Maaseh give the borders of Eretz Yisrael. It says the western border of Eretz Yisrael is the Mediterranean. Then it says that how do you, from there to the, you go to the northwestern corner to Solachem Hur Hur Hur. You measure to Hur Hur Hur. This is, by the way, not the same Hur 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 where Aaron was Nifter. They're actually on opposite corners of Eretz Yisrael. Hur Hur Hur, where Aaron was Nifter, is somewhere down here. Hur Hur Hur, where we're talking about over here, is somewhere up here. There's a lot of different opinions among the Rishonim and Achronim where Hur 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 is. The Kafka Raferach says that it's a mountain range all the way in what's nowadays the southern part of Turkey. There's a little tiny bit of Turkey that sticks out, or Ritzua, like we learned yesterday, that sticks out and then into along the coast over there, next to Syria, by the corner of the Mediterranean. The Kafka Raferach says that's where Hur 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 is. There's many other people have different ideas where it is exactly. It's someplace in Lebanon, whatever. Anyway. So, and our Gemara is going to call that Ture Amnon. Because in those times, actually, if we say that Hor 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 is that mountain in the corner of Turkey, in those times, actually, it was called the Amanus Mountain. So then that would fit with what the Gemara is over here saying, Amen. Similarly, as far as the southwestern corner of Eretz Yisrael also, the Pasuk says that the southwestern corner is Nachal Mitzrayim. What is Nachal Mitzrayim? Rashi on the Pasuk says over there that it means the Nile, or some arm of the Nile. The Nile actually has a delta, it divides into a bunch of branches that all reach the Mediterranean, so it would be one of those branches. Reb Sadia Gaon and some other people say that it's a stream over there called the Wadi El Arish. It's more or less on the present day border between Israel and Egypt. Wadi El Arish. So the end of it, the mouth of it, where it reaches the Mediterranean, is pretty close. It's pretty close to the present day international border. It goes kind of like this through the desert for a ways. But anyway. Okay. So what is considered Eretz Yisrael and what is considered Chutz La'aretz? Kol Sheshepeya V'Yodin Meturei Amnon V'Lefnim Eretz Yisrael, anything that slopes down from the mountains of Amnon, again, the Hor Hor, and inward, is considered Eretz Yisrael. What do we mean by inward over here? So Rashi says what we're talking about is the mountain range, the Turei Amnon, runs... The mountain range runs east to west. The slopes, you have one slope going northward and another slope going southward. What the Braise is saying, according to Rashi, is you go up to the crest of the mountain, the top of the mountain. Anything that slopes down southward from there belongs to Eretz Yisrael. Anything on the north slope is Chutz La'aretz. Mitzurei Amnon v'lachutz Chutz La'aretz. Anything outside Mitzurei Amnon is Chutz La'aretz. Tosfos has a different explanation that Turei Amnon actually is the other way around. That actually run the slopes run east and west, and therefore Tosfos explains that the Braise is telling us over here that anything eastward of Turei Amnon is Eretz Yisrael. Anything westward of it is Chutz La'aretz.
What is geographically Turei Amnon?
So that's what I'm saying. The Tractate of Aferach says that it's a mountain range in present day southern Turkey. They call it Jebel Akra. I think nowadays it has a different name. And then there's different other possibilities. It's a mountain near Beirut or near Tripoli or whatever. Anyway, so anything within Turei Amnon is Eretz Yisrael. Anything outside it on the other side of it is Chutz La'aretz. Hanasin Shebayam. What about islands in the Mediterranean? Roya Noisen Kiluchut Masua Halein Turei Amnon and Nachal Mitzrayim. You imagine as though there's a line measured out from Turei Amnon, from the peak of Turei Amnon until Nachal Mitzrayim, again, whatever Nachal Mitzrayim is, minachut v'lefnim Eretz Yisrael, minachut v'lachutz Chutz La'aretz. Whatever's inside that line, the water in that line is considered part of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore any islands in it are considered part of Eretz Yisrael. Anything outside of it is not. In this map over here, which again is a very rough map, it means, in other words, so if Turei Amnon is here, let's say, like the Tractate of Aferach says, and Nachal Mitzrayim is somewhere around here, then it means you draw a line like this. That straight line over there, and anything from the coast until that line is considered part of Eretz Yisrael.
What is that?
Anything within that, between the coast of Eretz Yisrael, Tel Aviv, Haifa, the rest of that, and that line would be considered Eretz Yisrael. Anything outside that line is considered Chutz La'aretz. That's the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no. Kol Sheken Neged, Eretz Yisrael, Harayu Eretz Yisrael. Anything parallel to Eretz Yisrael is like Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda says, you're not just measuring a line like this from Hor 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 until Nachal Mitzrayim, and then anything within that line. What you're actually doing is you're drawing, he says, two parallel lines. One straight out from Hor Hor Hor, going westward. The other one from Nachal Mitzrayim also going westward. Anything that's within those lines across the whole width of the Mediterranean until you get to the Atlantic Ocean is considered Eretz Yisrael.
Nachal Mitzrayim
and Hor Hor Hor. You do two parallel lines, which therefore covers most of the Mediterranean. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Ugvul Yom, the Pasuk says the western border, V'hoyelachana Yom HaGadol Ugvul, should be the Mediterranean and the border. So he learns from the word and the border. There's more that a good chunk of the Mediterranean and the islands in it are still considered the border of Eretz Yisrael.
So Har Levanon
are well inland. They're Har Levanon are near the Kinneret.
Yeah, but Yeah, you can see them from Haifa. That's not
Turei Amnon. No, Turei Amnon is it's someplace further up the coast. There's no question. It's according to the Kafir of Serach. Yes, according to towards the artist, someplace in Lebanon. No, you're thinking. I think what you're thinking of is from what you're thinking of maybe is Rosh HaNikra.
From Haifa, you can see very well the Har
Lebanon. Okay, but the Har Lebanon are more inland. We're talking about some mountain or other along the coast. Anyway, but here we're talking about something that's along the coast. I don't think the Har Lebanon, and I don't think the Lebanon mountains run until the coast. Okay, whatever. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying, therefore, that you draw two parallel lines across the Mediterranean. Whatever is within those two lines, including any islands that are in there, is considered part of Eretz Israel. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Gvul Yam, the western border, V'haylachama Yam HaGadol, should be the Mediterranean, Gvul, and the border, meaning that the Mediterranean itself consists, a large part of it consists of Eretz Yisrael. Zei Yalacham Gvul Yam, the Pasuk finishes, this shall be your western border. And Panosin Shabbat Zodin, so the islands that are on the sides, Royinos and Kilachut Masuach Alehen, Mikafluria, Vad Yam HaKiyonos, so you consider as though there was a line measured out going straight from Kafluria, which is a city at the top of Har, going until all the way out until the Atlantic Ocean, or Menachem Mitzrayim by the Yamukianos, and in the south from Nachem Mitzrayim, the southwestern corner, until the Atlantic. So Tosfos asked the question, why does Rabbi Yehuda change? The Tanakhama had mentioned her, and all of a sudden Rabbi Yehuda is bringing in Kafluria. What's the difference? So that's why Tosfos says that Turei Amnon doesn't, it's not the slopes go to the north and to the south, like Rashi says, so therefore the crest itself runs east and west, and you can just measure straight out from the crest. No, Tosfos says the crest, the mountain, remember, we're talking about a range of mountains over here. We're not talking one single mountain that has a peak. We're talking about a range of mountains. So the crest of those mountains, that Tosfos says, runs north and south. The slopes run east and west. The crest means the top of the mountain. Like you have, in other words, a mountain is not, we're not talking about one single mountain that comes to a peak. We're talking like a mountain that has like the top of it goes on for a distance. So according to Rashi, what it is the mountain runs like this. You have on this side of the Jol, on this side is Chutzlaret, and here is the Mediterranean. So therefore, according to Rashi, yes, there's no specific reason for the order to mention Kafluria specifically. Kafluria is up here. Fine, you could have just as well mentioned the top of Hor, just like the Chachamim did. According to Tosfos, it's the other way around. This is how the mountain is. The sea, the Mediterranean, is here. The crest of the mountain runs along here from north to south. And Kafluria, Tosfos says, is actually at the northern end of it. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, Chachamim are just saying you measure from Har till Nachal Mitzrayim. They measure their line. It doesn't really matter where on this you're measuring your end of the line from. But if I'm saying you want to go across the Mediterranean and include all the islands, then it becomes important to know what part of this crest are you measuring from. You're measuring from the southern end, from the northern end, whatever. Kafluria is at the northern end. You measure from there. And Eretz Yisrael is down here. The body of Eretz Yisrael is down here. Yeah. So you measure this line from Kafluria until the Atlantic, or Menachem Mitzrayim by the Yam HaKiyonos, and from Nachem Mitzrayim in the southwest corner out to the Atlantic, Menachut for the Eretz Yisrael, Menachut for Lachutz Chutz La'aretz. Anything within those lines is considered Eretz Yisrael. Anything outside those lines is considered Chutz La'aretz. Which Tosfos asked the question in that case in their times, and Rabbeinu Peter, actually an interesting name, asked Rabbeinu Tam. We live west of Eretz Yisrael, according to what the Gemara is saying over here. We should be Chayiv and Truma and Maisa and the other mitzvahs of Floris Barra. They live in France, which is more or less west of Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Tam said, hold on. So first of all, Rabbeinu Tam said, anyway, we don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. We hold like the Chacham. Although it's an interesting thing, Chassam Sofer says that actually when Mashiach comes, we will hold like Rabbi Yehuda in this regard. All those islands in the Mediterranean that are within the same latitude as Eretz Yisrael will become part of Eretz Yisrael. He says because there's a Gemara that mentions where the lands of Keni, Knez, and Kadmoni that were promised to Abraham Avinu and then he never got them. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra that identifies, there's one opinion over there that identifies one of them as Aspamia, which is Spain, and another one as something, whatever, different places in that part of the world. So how does it come to be? Because we're talking according to the Yehuda. Anyway, Tosfos then also says another thing, that we're only talking the islands that are within these that are within these latitudes. We're not talking about the land masses, so we're not talking about Spain or France or Italy or what have you. We're only talking about the islands that are between those latitudes. Which then gets us into the question, I mean, so what do we think then? Anybody who's in those places knows Lishma and is Adam at certain Lakaimer? So Tosfos says actually what we're discussing over here, we're not discussing over here really as far as the dinim of Bidkin necessarily. We're talking, you know, we talked before about the borders of Ole Bavel and the borders of Ole Mitzrayim, the original borders that were promised to the Jewish people in Parshas Maaseh, and then you have which most of which they conquered the first time around. Then they went into Golus after the Chorban Bayis Rishon. When they came back and resettled Eretz Yisrael, they settled a much smaller area. That's why the Mishnah had mentioned Akoi. And we'll see soon in the Gemara that Akoi is half inside Eretz Yisrael and half outside. Ashkelon and all these other places that in the time of the first Beis Mikdash they had conquered, but in the time of the second Beis Mikdash they didn't resettle them. So what we're talking about here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, about the islands in the Mediterranean, may be referring to the borders of Ole Bavel. Not necessarily the borders of Ole Bavel. It's true, Ole Bavel didn't necessarily resettle those areas. Or Tosfos says that maybe yes, we know that all the people in those places know Lishma, know the dinim of Lishma, because those places in the islands were fairly heavily settled by Jews. Tosfos brings from the Gemara and Menachos that says that throughout the Mediterranean basin, even the Goyim know what Jews are and what the Torah is and so forth, because there were so many of them around. About Kachigni, actually, is the expression in the Gemara, whatever, anyway. So based on all these possibilities, so you have Yehuda can be saying then, that's what Tosfos is saying, that we're only talking about the islands, not necessarily the land masses. And to go... There's lots of islands. There's Cyprus, there's a whole bunch of Greek islands. Now, besides that, there's a whole bunch of Greek islands. The Kaftar Aferach actually goes through. He tells us, based on the latitudes of a number of these islands, he mentions Mallorca off the coast of Spain. He mentions, I think he mentioned Sardinia. I don't remember what else he, of course, yeah, whatever. That are between these latitudes. Yeah. Having said all that, the Kaftar Aferach also points out, to answer Rabbi Nepeta's original question, what are you concerned about France for? France is far north of any of that. Although with that said, you know, it's not like the Gemara is specifically saying over here that those lines, according to Rabbi Yehuda, half the gap can be measured east to west. Maybe they could be measured, you know, they could be measured northeast, they could be measured according to any compass heading, and in that case it would depend on what islands they include. I've actually seen someone quote, I saw that someone quotes something from Sam Sofer, who says that England is considered one of those islands that according to Rabbi Yehuda would be considered part of Eretz Yisrael, and that's way far north. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So going back to the original two brises that we quoted, then if you have one brise saying that a get that's written on board a ship is like an Eretz Yisrael, another one says that it's not, we'd be talking about a ship that's elsewhere in the Mediterranean. If it's within the line that the Chachamim said, there's no question that's considered part of Eretz Yisrael for sure. But if it's outside that line, anywhere else in the Mediterranean, according to the Bihudah, it's considered part of Eretz Yisrael, according to the Chachamim, it's not.
Is this applicable now, or is it applicable on a ship?
So that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The practical halacha is like the chachamim, that only the part between the curved, only the first chut that the chachamim mentioned, between the coastline of Eretz Yisrael, which is curved, and that line, only any ships or any islands within that are considered part of Eretz Yisrael. The halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. So Chassam Sofer says that in Mashiach's times, those areas will be.
What was the difference between the get that's written at yourself? So that there are people more learned than you?
We said two reasons. We said, number one, in Eretz Yisrael, they're more learned. They know the dinim of Lishma and the other dinim of a get. And number two, in Eretz Yisrael, people are always traveling around from one place to another. Therefore, you have Adim available to validate the signatures on it, to certify that we recognize the signatures of these Adim and we know that they actually signed it and it's not forged. That's what we started talking about at the beginning of the sugya. The question, are we talking about that maybe the people on the boat are from Eretz Yisrael, but nevertheless, if they're in Chutz Laaretz, if they're in a place that's considered Chutz Laaretz, we still don't want to start distinguishing between one group of people in Chutz Laaretz or not. Or maybe we're talking about people who are constantly on board. They live their whole lives aboard the boat, basically. Okay, the question is, Rabbanan hai gvul ugvul mai avilei. So what are the Rabbanan who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda? What do they use the word gvul for in the pasuk? Rabbi Yehuda is using it to say that the entire, most of the width of the Mediterranean is part of Eretz Yisrael. What does he use? What do the Chachamim use it for? The answer is Megoyle the Nothin. Yes, they need that pasuk precisely to tell us that the islands within their line are considered part of Eretz Yisrael. Without that, you would think that the border of Eretz Yisrael ends at the coast. Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda would answer that Nothin. Let's Rikikra. You don't need a pasuk. You don't need a pasuk to tell us that. What do you need a pasuk for to tell us the islands that are between his two lines, not behind the Chachamim's line? The Mishnah said Rav Meir only Akri Eretz Yisrael. Rav Meir had said that Akri is like Eretz Yisrael as far as Gittin. So now Akri actually so Akri is on the one hand we're saying over here according to the Meir it's considered part of Eretz Yisrael as far as Gittin, as far as the dinim of Bafana Nechtem. The fact is though actually we discussed before the concept the Yerushalmi talks about it a bit also that Akri is actually half Eretz Yisrael and half Kufara. But besides that also, Akri was far away from the major population centers of Eretz Yisrael at that time. So yes, we'll allow that, so sort of Meir is going to say that fine, they're close enough, relatively speaking, that they know the dinim of Lishma and that there were Edim and Sirin Lachaimer. But it's kind of like on the border, sort of. So therefore, Bo Menem and Abchiba Abba, so they asked Abchiba Abba the question, Hamlecha Abya Lasuya. So going off the topic of Akri a second, we'll get back to that. If somebody sells his slave, his Eved Kanani, to somebody in Syria. Now, what is Syria? Syria is more or less the large parts of what's today Syria. What happened was that David HaMelech conquered it and annexed it to Eretz Yisrael, but for different reasons that we'll talk about in a second, it's not considered fully part of Eretz Yisrael. It's called Kibush Yachid. It's called something that was done in private, sort of on his own initiative. So Rashi says the problem with it, the reason why Syria is Kibush Yachid, is because he didn't have the whole Jewish people together conquer it. Like in Yeshua's time, the whole Jewish people collectively went to conquer Eretz Yisrael from the seven nations. Mm-hmm. David, in this case, when he took the army to conquer Syria, he didn't take the whole army. He took a contingent of it, and therefore Rashi says it's not considered a full fledged part of Eretz Yisrael. Tosfos brings a different reason based on a Sifri that says that it doesn't matter how many people go and conquer it. Yes, if the problem was that David conquered Syria before he had fully conquered Eretz Yisrael. There were still, in David's time, there were enclaves in Eretz Yisrael where Goyim of the seven nations lived, and David had not yet finished conquering them. So there's a famous thing that they tell him, Somuch l'Palpin Shalchol Kavashta. You haven't even conquered near your own palace, parts of Yerushalayim. How are you talking? You're going on foreign adventures and conquering Syria. And there's also they talk about the idea, therefore, that the reason it's called Kibush Yachid, according to that, is because in order to conquer land that will then be considered fully part of Eretz Yisrael, you need the agreement of the king, the Sanhedrin, and the Urim Baturim. In this case, David did it on his own without consulting with the Sanhedrin and without consulting with the Urim Baturim. If he had consulted with them, they would have, especially the Urim Baturim, would have told him, tax not for that reason. You haven't finished conquering Eretz Yisrael proper yet. So since he did, the reason they did it originally, I mean, is the kings of Aram over there were a threat to Eretz Yisrael. They kept on harassing and then attacking Eretz Yisrael. So he felt the need to conquer them and then. Fine, but it's Rishus in the sense that to annex it to Eretz Yisrael is ordinarily what he would do in order to neutralize the threat. Fine, he'd invade them, he'd, you know, get rid of their king or whatever, set up a puppet, whatever it is, and leave. Instead, he annexed it to Eretz Yisrael.
To charge tax.
So yeah, so it's okay to make them pay taxes, etc. Yeah. But like this, he actually went in the next to Eretz Yisrael. So that, according to Rashi, he didn't use the whole army, or according to Tosfos, he didn't do it before he finished conquering Eretz Yisrael proper. So therefore, Syria becomes kind of a half and half thing, as we'll see soon in the Gemara. In some ways, it's like Eretz Yisrael. In some ways, it's like Chutzlaret. So therefore, now there's a din. We'll learn later on in the Masechta that if a person sells his Eved Kanani to somebody, if a person living in Eretz Yisrael sells his Eved Kanani to somebody living outside Eretz Yisrael, that slave automatically goes free. Because you're doing something wrong to him. You're preventing him, we cancel him, we cancel the buyer, that is, because an eved, after all, is chayiv in mitzvahs. You're taking him away from doing the mitzvahs that are the mitzvahs that only apply in Eretz Yisrael. So the question is, now, so that applies if you sell him to Chutz La'aretz outright. What about if you sell him to somebody in Syria? Is it like selling him to somebody in Chutz La'aretz or not? So Rav Chiya Bahava tells him, Tinisua. Well, we can prove it from our Mishnah. We said, Rav Neir Oema Akka Keret Yisrael Gittin, which implies that Gittin Ein La'avadim Lai. That Akka, even Akka, which is close to Eretz Yisrael, relatively speaking, is only considered like Eretz Yisrael as far as Gittin, but not as far as the dinim of Avadim. According to Rav Meir, another, even Rav Meir would say, and certainly the Chachamim would disagree with him, would say that if you sold your Eved to somebody in Akka, then he would go free. But Choshek in Syria, the Merach Kosova, how much more so Syria, which is much further away from the main centers of Eretz Yisrael. So, Simen Avbarak is the simen for the six things that we're going to mention, three ways in which Tanar Abanah, B'shloshet Varem Shavs Asura La'aretz Yisrael, there's three ways in which Syria is like Eretz Yisrael, B'shloshet L'chutz La'aretz, and there's three ways in which it's like Chutz La'aretz, and the Simen Avbarak, the first three letters are simen for the three things in which it's like Chutz La'aretz, and the next three are the three ways in which Syria is like Eretz Yisrael. Number one, after Tomei to Chutz La'aretz, the dirt of Syria is Tomei just like the dirt of Chutz La'aretz. We talked about this a lot in Nazir a couple of months ago, that the Chachamim made a Gzera, the Chachamim actually made a series of Gzeras. First they made a Gzera that the dirt of Eretz Ha'amim is Tomei, because of Shash, the people, the Goyim may have buried people over there, they just bury people anywhere, especially like aborted or stillborn babies or whatever. They're not Metamei Ba'oil, but they're still Metamei Mago V'Masa, if you touch or carry. There may be pieces of a bone or whatever mixed in with the dirt. Later on, the Chachamim also made a gzera about Avir Eretz Amim, about the airspace of Eretz Amim. So the dirt of Syria is for that purpose, just like the dirt of Chutz La'aretz. It's metallic. And actually, within that itself, there were two different stages. There was a stage when they said that anything that touches that dirt is Sufik Tomei. Later on, they said, no, it's Vavei Tomei. It's Al Shisha Sfeikas, Serafin Truma, the six cases, which in principle are Sufik, but nevertheless, we're machmir on them. We say that if Truma touches one of those six things, you still burn it as if it was Vavei Tomei. This is one of them. Number two, the person who sells a slave to somebody in Syria is the equivalent of selling it to Chutz La'aretz, and therefore we cancel the buyer and the slave goes free. And number three, maybe get from Syria can maybe Chutz La'aretz. Somebody who brings a get from Syria, it's the same as to Eretz Yisrael, it's the same as bringing it from Chutz La'aretz, because again, you don't have people traveling commonly enough between Syria and Eretz Yisrael, and maybe also, that's the reason Rashi says, he doesn't mention the Lashma reason, maybe because the Gemara had said before that eventually they learned about Lashma, whatever, so therefore you need to say Bufana Nefta, Bufana Nefta.
So all the rest is like Eretz Yisrael?
One of the three ways in which the Shloish is like Israel, the three ways in which Syria is like Eretz Yisrael, as follows. Number one, Chayevet from Meiser of Shvius Eretz Yisrael. You're Chayev in Meiser and the Dinim of Shvius are there, just like Eretz Yisrael. Even though Ofra Tamei, yeah. Number two, Varoitza Likonis Labatara Nichnas. Number two, a person who wants to go into Syria and still remain Tahar has a way to do so, as we'll talk in a minute. And number three, Vahakoinah, Sod of Assyria, somebody who buys a field in Syria, Kakoinah Bapazara Yerushalayim. It's the equivalent of buying it in the districts of Yerushalayim. What do we mean by that? Also, Gemara we'll talk about soon. Chayav is from Isaiah of Ashvias, Kerit Israel. Why? Because Kasav of Kibush, Yachin Shmei Kibush. Because the Tana of this Braisa holds that even though, again, Syria is only a kibush yachid, it was only conquered unofficially, so to speak, by David, nevertheless, that's considered a valid kibush to the extent that it has certain dinim, that it has certain dinim of Eretz Yisrael, according to the Tana, and that's halacha. Therefore, the mitzvah saplois bar, therefore the mitzvah saplois bar is applied to it. Maybe only in the bottom, but at least they apply. If it was considered a full-fledged part of Eretz
Yisrael, all the bonds become no problem.
So we learned at the end of Nazir, Elam Matsu retired Eretz Yisrael, that the Chachamim found an excuse to be able to say that Eretz Yisrael was Torah. The Chachamim did not want to have to say that Eretz Yisrael is Torah, because that would create a lot of problems for people who eat Truma and so forth. So nowadays, not so, because we don't have to be Nizir and Truma retired anyway. But in those times, they did not want to declare places in Eretz Yisrael Torah without solid evidence of it. There's also the fact, another reason why Eretz Amim is Tomei is because you have all the dead people from the Mabul ended up over there and in various places, especially in Babel, but to a lesser extent in other places, whereas the Mabul did not fall in Eretz Yisrael. Actually, Gemara and Zvachim has a discussion about that, but the majority opinion over there is that the Mabul did not, the range of the Mabul did not fall in Eretz Yisrael.
Lower or?
No, not because it's lower, but the rain didn't fall there. It flooded in there from other places, and that's the people in Eretz Yisrael. I ended up getting killed, but still, you didn't have the same kind of thing with his body screwing all over the place like there would have been everywhere else in the world. Number two, you say that the second thing we said is if somebody wants to go into Syria and still stay Tahar, he'll be able to. What do you mean? You just said before the dirt of Syria is Tahar. As soon as you walk in there, you're going to become Tahar from touching the dirt. The answer is Veshita Tevo Migdol. Yes, but we could be talking about that you brought in there in a box or a chest or a cabinet. Somebody else carried you in there inside one of those things. The Tanya is within a place. An nishnas la eretz amim b'shita tevo migdol. Somebody goes into eretz amim, not Syria, eretz amim, the rest of the world, in a shita tevo migdol. Rebbe mitame, Rebbe Yisrael, Rebbe Yehuda mitar. So Rebbe says it's tame because we learned this concept before. We learned it way back in Erevin. We learned it more recently in Nazir that Rebbe holds oil zoruk, a moving oil, is not considered an oil. Because again, nowadays the kohenim flying in planes over kvarim. So therefore, a moving box can't be considered an oil. So therefore you're still overshadowing the dirt of Eretz Amim. And once the Chachamim made their last takana about that, and then you become Tommy from that alone. That's why you have all the issues with Koyanim flying in place. So if they're flying over Goyisha grade, it's less of an issue because you have the opinion of Rav Shimon Bayechoy, which I think is accepted by halacha, that Kibre Akwa were not Matamid oil. But if it's flying over Jewish graves, yeah, that's where every so often you hear in the news about flights in and out of Tel Aviv that have to be rerouted in order to avoid issues with Koyanim, in order to avoid issues for Koyanim because there's Batei Kvaros nearby, yeah.
That's according to Rabbi.
Rabbi Yehuda says not a problem. But anyway, the point is, the Afilu Rabbi lo yikom atame ela be'eretz amin. So even Rebbe is not going to say it's a problem only when it comes to full-fledged Eretz Amim. The Gozra Gush of Alavira. Because there we said they made a Xera that the dirt of it is Metamayu, Vimago Vimasa, and also that the airspace of it, that if you go into the air of it, even if you have not touched any of the dirt, you're going to become Tomei. Avo Surya, Al Gush of Gozra, Alavira, like Gozra, when it comes to Surya, they only made a Xera that if you actually touch the dirt, you'll become Tomei, not if you're overshadowing it, not if you're in the air. So this person is being carried in a box, and we're talking, by the way, we're talking about a box that's large enough that it's not Makabel Tuma. It has to be the box holds at least 40 saw and is not meant to be set down. It's got a rounded bottom or whatever.
A plane, maybe.
A plane is meant to be set down on wheels. I don't know if that would work, but a plane is made out of metal anyway. So metal has a whole different halachos. We're talking about wooden containers. So then, according to Rebbe Yosef Behuda, it's large enough to be an oil, large enough to be a tent, and therefore he says that even in Eretz Amim it'll be taller. And according to Rebbe, not because it's an oil zoda, it's a moving tent.
Do you only carry it on wheels, or someone carries it?
So that's how Rashi says over here, that we have to, that could be that other people are carrying the box. Tosfos says actually not necessarily. When we're talking about Surya over here, given that we're saying that going into the air of Surya doesn't make you tame, only touching the dirt, actually you could ride a horse into Surya and you'll still be tame. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a box. The reason we're mentioning a box is because you have the Macholik Rebbe and Rabbi Yosef Behuda talking about a box when it comes to general Eretz Amin. When it comes to Surya, you don't have to say that. Then the third thing we said was Akona Sod the Surya Kona Bapavare Yerushalayim. Somebody who buys a field in Surya is the equivalent of buying in one of the nearby districts of Yerushalayim. Lamayim Hilchsa. What is that? Lagabi, what is that halacha relevant to? It means that you can write out a deed. If you're buying such a field in Surya, you can write out a deed for it even on Shabbos. Shabbos, what do you mean? You can't write on Shabbos. The answer is, like what we find that Rava says in a different connection, it means that in certain cases, you tell a goy to do something. The context over there is talking about, for example, a woman who gave birth more than a week ago or something, where you, you, Jews can't be Mechal Shabbat Torah anymore, but you can tell a Goy, even though normally telling a Goy is also on Shabbat, he would master it in that case. That's the Shavuot, yeah, it's only the Rabban. I'm the Achim, it's Shavuot. I mean, it's only the Rabban. But then he does the same thing, Hachinami, the same thing over here. So we're talking about over here, you tell the Goy to write out the deed, and he writes it. Even though normally telling a guy to do a malacha on Shabbos is also the Rabbanan, since it's important for the settlement of Eretz Yisrael, because you want to get the goyim out of it and have Jews settle in it, then the Chachamim did not make this gzeira. So Rashi says over here, and the Alter Rebbe brings in Shulchan Aruch, although none of the other posts can do, that we're talking about the situation over here is it can't wait till after Shabbos because the guy who's selling wants to leave town. So, on Shabbos, so you arranged with him the sale. He's gonna, you didn't have time to get a deed written before Shabbos. Now it's Shabbos, and the guy wants to leave on Shabbos. He's not going to be around lots of Shabbos or Sunday to write it. So then, in that case, that's what we're talking about over here—that you can tell a guy to do it. None of the other posts can mention that distinction though. So maybe they would say that it doesn't matter even if he's still in town, he might change his mind or whatever. Who knows? The other, another interesting thing is that Amar brings from the Ur Zeruah that what you should do is this goy who you're telling to write the deed, have him write it in a goyish language. Because then the Ur Zeruah says there won't be so much of an issue of writing on Shabbos. The issue of writing on Shabbos, the Ur Zeruah wants to say, is primarily on writing in Lashon Kodesh. However, the Ur Zeruah seems to be a das yochid on that. Everybody else says that it doesn't make a difference. Why not? If you have a goy in Israel nowadays, they know Hebrew. The Arabs in Israel nowadays speak Hebrew, for example. Okay, you tell them what to write. Anyway, whatever. In this case, okay, we're talking about the Ur Zeruah saying you should have him write in a goyish language. Anyway, the point is that we're saying Mishum Yushav Eretz Yisrael because of the importance of settling Eretz Yisrael. So Tosfos gets into a discussion over here that we say that only in this case do we allow it. Normally, even in the case of other important mitzvahs, for example, Tosfos brings from a Gemara that we learned way back in Erevin about a case where a bris milah was being where they were getting ready for a bris milah on Shabbos and the hot water that they're supposed to use afterwards to bathe the baby spilled. So there we don't say in order to allow the bris to happen on Shabbos, we'll allow a goy to heat up new water. Only we say, the Gemara says over there, if the mother herself needs, then you're allowed to tell a goy to heat up water for her because she's still considered a choyla, then you can also have him add more water for the baby, but not otherwise, even though milah is a very important mitzvah. Because it's still, as important as it is, we're still not going to allow the shavuos of telling a goy to do a malacha deraisa in order for that to happen. If it's a malacha derabanan, that's different. But over here, this is the exception where we're saying that we're allowing to tell a goy even to do a malacha deraisa. Telling the goy is a shavuos, but we're allowing it from Yishevar Tishah. Interesting thing, by the way, the Rivosh said. That the what we're talking about here, specifically when you're buying land in Eretz Yisrael or in Syria, as we're saying over here, the difference is because that's an ongoing thing. Once you buy this piece of land, it's going to remain in Jewish hands for a long period of time. As opposed to, he says, someone asked him, what about, for example, by the same logic, if Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is so important, are you allowed to travel on a boat to go to Eretz Yisrael on Shabbos? Are you allowed to board a boat on Shabbos to go to Eretz Yisrael? He says, no, the difference is that's a one-time thing. This that we're saying over here, buying from a goy, is going to be an ongoing, there's going to be pulling the mshefes. Therefore, that's different. That's what I'm making on that. We're not going to be making and allow you to board a ship on Shabbos in order to travel to Eretz Yisrael. Where's the house? Because you'll be a field or whatever, you're buying it, and it's going to be a pool in the Mshechas, so this house is going to stay in Jewish hands, then that, yes.
So
doesn't matter, but that's in order to, but you haven't bought it yet. The fact is, right now, you're being Mechal Shabbos, in order that later on, you're like, we're not going to go that far. Yeah. Actually, okay, you yourself are not being bored of it. We're not talking about that you're being Mechal Shabbos, we're talking about, for example, that you're telling the guy, for example, to cast off and start taking the boat out. You yourself, let's say, have been Kodesh Shvisa on the boat before Shabbos, which you're allowed to do, whatever, but you're telling the guy on Shabbos to get going. That's what he's saying. We're not allowing that kind of Shavuos for that kind of thing because that's just a one-time thing as opposed to an ongoing, to something that has an ongoing effect. That we're allowing this. Yes. Yes. I mean, this Gemara is also brought. This Gemara is also brought, I think, in Avodah Zarah. But yeah, actually in Bava Kamma, actually. But yeah, that's the, as far as I know, this is the only exception.
Yeah.
The pastors, I mean, but the fast will have been over hours before. So yeah.